Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, joined tonight by Jen Swertman from The Blind Tiger.
Hi, Jimmy. Happy Thanksgiving week.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, buddy. Hey, do you know that we're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com?
I knew that.
Yeah.
I've heard that before.
Have you taken that Great Brewers test, the 100 or the 20?
No.
Well, you should.
I'll go home tonight and I'll work on that.
Check out GreatBrewers.com, learn more about beer education, and test yourself on the Great Brewers test. And we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com. 34 New York City good beer bars serve and promote good beer. Well, this is Thanksgiving week, and you know, everyone's asking, what do you drink for Thanksgiving? Eric Asimov of the New York Times last week, he gave a real good overview of Thanksgiving beverages. Instead of just talking about wine, he also mentioned beer and cocktails.
What did he say?
He mentioned, you know, some standard beers, saisons and things, but he was alluding to sour beers as being something that he would like with a turkey. And I thought that might be a good idea. We've got some special beers tonight and some special guests. A friend from Philadelphia, Tom Peters. Many of you know him from Monk's Cafe.
Yay!
How you doing, Jimmy?
And Ed Barastecki, our Brooklyn hero from Monk's Cafe. Ed, how are you?
Yay!
So he doesn't want to talk, but we're here to talk about some vintage beers and
he
old
just
beers.
Wants to drink. He wants to sit back and drink.
Never. Yeah,
that's nothing new.
Well, with the theme of the holiday and family and all that, our good friend Ray Dieter, who has passed away this year, a few months ago, his wife Catherine gave me a couple old bottles of beer from Ray's collection. We've got, Tom, what do we have here? We've got four beers from Ray Dieter's personal collection that we're going to share on Thanksgiving. And it's also an introduction into vintage beer. So this is kind of like old beers and old guys.
and
I resemble that remark. So this is the Fuller Silver Celebration, the 25th anniversary, 1952-1977. So it's extra strong bitter. I can't discern from the label how strong it is, but it definitely has been aged. It matterized a little bit. It's got that port and Madeira overtone.
I'm thinking that this is a beer that Ray might have got in England.
You think? I think he would have to. I don't think
any of
us
years
have
ago
seen
he
it over
traveled
here.
With his wife and.
I've never seen this beer in America ever. So thank you for sharing. Thank you, yes. Kathy. Thank you, Ray. Yes.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
I miss Ray.
We all do.
Let's make a toast of the Thanksgiving coming. We think about our family and friends. We do think about Ray Dieter.
To Ray.
Our good friend. Cheers. Yes. And we got a couple other beers, too. We've got a Trek Warehouse from 1977 and two Thomas Hardys, 1984 and 1986. Have you had a lot of experience with vintage beers, Tom?
Alcohol in general.
Yeah, do you sell her?
I sell her a lot of beers. I was just commenting earlier that the oldest beer I ever consumed was a 1950 Liefman's Gutenbond that Philip DeVolder brought over to Monk's one time, the brewer. So that's the first time I had a beer older than me, and it was in fantastic shape.
What style is that beer?
A Gutenbond is a Flemish brown sour ale.
Okay.
So it lends itself, you know, with the high acidity, low pH, it lends itself to aging. So it stood up really well.
So this the 77 Fuller's is a little over the hill.
It's a little oxidized, just a tad, but surprisingly good shape.
Yeah.
And then what's next, the Truck Warehouse?
Truck Warehouse. I'm drinking as fast as I can.
Yeah, we're chugging it. Yeah. Should savor it, my gosh.
Ooh, now that smells delicious.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with wine, there's an appreciation for vintage. I think in beer, too, you know. I think that just identifying which beers are age-worthy.
Isn't there an interesting botanical in this beer? I can't remember what the profile is. Do we remember?
Well, with the Jacobite has botanicals.
Oh, the Jacobite,
right.
Okay.
But this so Traquair, this is a Belgian beer, right? No?
No.
English.
Scottish?
Scottish, I'm sorry,
Scottish.
Yeah.
Scottish.
Yeah, they would kill me.
Remember, Ray was an Anglophile.
He certainly was. Among many things.
A Europhile, but an Anglophile specifically.
Yeah, I do get the botanicals out of it, though, but yeah. I don't think there are any in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
But that's not oxidized at all, so that held up really well.
Do we have any... Did it say on the label how old that beer was? Do we know?
I think it said 1977,
That's
right?
another 77?
That was also, yes. I have a feeling maybe that was something from Ray's travels as well.
Maybe same year.
Because we know that before
he... the same suitcase.
Before he opened DBA. He was inspired by...
Yeah, but 77, Ray was... how old?
He was 12.
It was before the Skylab hat, but... You know,
we knew he was ahead of his time.
I'm sure that he was traveling. He was traveling to UK with his wife well before he had opened DBA. And that's how he got his appreciation for not only English beers, but also pub culture.
Yeah.
Which he always appreciated.
Which he brought right back.
Who does not like
here.
Pub culture?
Certainly not me.
You know, Tom, it's really, we've had you on the on a call-in before, but we never actually had you on the show.
Yeah, this will probably be the last time you invite me back. But
so what inspires you? I mean, you've got one of the most famous, most popular beer bars in America, Monk's Cafe. What inspired you to do that?
I took a trip to Belgium in 1984, and you know, I just, by happenstance, was served a Duvel, and then a Chimay Blue, and then an Orval. And of course, I drank them like
the trifecta.
Oh my God! But I drank them like they were light lagers, so I was in an advanced state of refreshment quickly. So I ended up having to stay in Brussels for a couple more days than I anticipated, and I just fell in love with the culture. You know, the food, the arts. You know, going into the museum and seeing Hieronymus Bosch and the Bruegels and Rubens. Like, I never understood the term Flemish masters until I was in Brussels, and the beer was phenomenal and the people were great. So I came back to Philly and started pushing Belgian beer in 1985. And
pushing, yeah. is that when you opened the bar?
I was managing another bar for a friend, and that which I became a partner in, and so we just went whole hog into it.
Does that bar still exist?
It's gone after I left.
Oh, okay. You took it with you.
What was it called?
Copa 2. Which Ray and Dennis came to the first time they were there was, I think, maybe 94, 95. I did 16 Belgians on draft one afternoon.
Wow.
And it was, I didn't have any idea there was a Belgian beer culture in America. But we had people come down from Boston and up from D.C. and New York.
How did they know about it back then? I mean, you know, that was pre-internet.
Yeah.
So, you know, like now it's like everyone all over. Yeah, a telegraph.
Pony Express.
Morse code.
Yeah, I was shocked at how many people showed up from traveled as far as they did. It was really cool.
Was Bill Coleman there?
Bill Coleman was not there.
Who's Bill Coleman?
He's the salty dog.
Exactly. Salty dog of all salty dogs. Beer geek of all beer geeks.
And what does he do?
Just a beer
he
geek.
He makes cartoons.
Does he reside in Philadelphia? Is that where we're getting?
He makes cartoons for what?
He resides all over.
He resides wherever he resides.
Yeah, he also makes the labels for De Regenboog Brewery.
He actually is an artist, actually.
So he does all the labels, and those labels are all over Belgium, but Matthias Niedhart from Be United does not like those labels, so we have different labels in America.
And when did you open Monk's Cafe?
We opened there in 1997, like I think January or February in 97. That's a bit of a blur for me.
So that was several years later. Was it directly from the first bar that you were running to your own place?
Yeah,
it was
literally around the corner, so it was a block away.
Got it. And now Muggs is legendary. Muggs.
Jen, what's the verdict on the...
I'm talking to Ed
that.
Over there.
I appreciate that very much.
Jen, what's the verdict on the Traquair House 1977?
What's my verdict?
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
It still held up good, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's really interesting. I'm not concentrating enough to know exactly what I'm smelling.
Well, the first thing is when you find a vintage beer and it's still holding up, you know, you have to definitely... say there's something there.
I have to interject because speaking of Bill Coleman before, and we actually did the vintage tastings of all vintage tastings. We had a 100-year-old bottle of beer, And I don't think
was this at Mugs?
At Mugs.
I got that right this time. Mugs. Yeah.
Monks? Yeah. And we
you guys are brothers, actually.
That's it.
Mugs.
Yeah, I guess, right. Put an M in front of anything. Actually, we had a bottle of Bass King's Ale, which was about 100 years old. And it was sealed, corked, and waxed. And
Had been sitting on that?
No, Bill Coleman. Again, his name
He's over 100 years old now.
No. They hunted this bottle down, and it was waxed and corked. So I looked at it. I'm like, am I going to die after this or not? And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to drink this no matter what. And if anything happens to me, it happens, whatever. And it still was alive. It had these sherry overtones, and we drank the whole bottle. So vintage beer lives.
Yeah, that wax seal really helps.
Yeah.
Corked and crown capped.
If it wasn't waxed, then I'd kind of look at it differently.
Did I mention redundancy is a good thing? No.
What'd you say?
And so if it had killed you, what a way to go with a 100-year-old beer.
So what are we drinking right now, Tom?
Now we're drinking a Thomas Hardy 1994. And that is 94? Just...
94?
Yeah, 94. Okay. That's stupid good.
This beer usually is.
Okay.
And then the next one we're going to have is a 1986. So digression is a good thing.
That regression. Is delicious.
Yeah, this is beautiful. This beer is made to lay down. Not, you know, a lot of people lay beers down in their cellar that should not be laid down.
Like IPAs.
Oh, my God. A double IPA, so you can lay it down double the time.
Wrong.
You drink them fresh. I'd say 90% of the beers out there should be consumed very quickly, as soon as possible after brewing. Other things like lambics, like a goose, a traditional one can lay down 35, 40 years. The oldest one I've had is 35 years old. And I brought along a bottle of the Cantillon Loupepe Creek from 1998. We'll see how that holds up. Mm-hmm. Of all the fruits they add to the beer, that's the one that lasts the best.
Cherries.
Yeah, nice Flemish sour cherries, pits, and everything in there. So it has a little bit of a...
tannins of some kind?
Yeah, it has almond, like a marzipan character from the pits. And we'll see if sometimes it turns a little browner. This was stupid bright red. Yeah, it still looks good.
Still stupid bright red.
there's a fruit nose, too. It's nice.
Yeah, like the framboise, it dissipates very quickly. In the apricot builds up acetobacter, so it becomes a little more harsh. But the creek actually does well. So we'll see how that is. But if you get a real old lambic, an old goose, you can literally lay that down 35 or 40 years.
Yeah, we had an old one at Jimmy's 43 that Don and Wendy from Van Bergen to Wolf brought. How old was that one? Do you remember,
it was
Jimmy?
A 30-year lambic.
Yeah, it was pretty
old.
Was
that from Frank Bone or...?
It was a crazy case that they acquired, a broker who like took them out in the countryside, and there was a guy who had this case in his basement. A crazy story, but it was really, it was quite old. It was probably the oldest thing I've
consumed.
It's a
good side of beer, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people making beers that they say are age worthy, and
they're not always right.
Yeah.
Well, it's like wine. You know, certain wines are built for aging and certain wines are not built for the same kind of aging. You have to understand what properties that you're looking at that have the potential for that.
Yeah, and also the storage temperature, how frequently you move it.
Of course.
And I see people with regular crown caps, which is the standard opener cap, and they lay them down on their side. You cannot do that because it'll pick up a metallic taste.
Right.
So you need to stand, you know, crown caps up and lay corks down, if it's a good cork.
I've been an avid fan of vintaging, but I totally regret that I didn't vintage all my beers. Like, took a case every year just to see.
Just to learn?
Yeah. Just to experiment with.
If we all had infinite space and, you know.
Yeah, but even
Which ones really stood out in your mind, Ed? Because
as far as vintaging?
Which ones are worthy of vintaging?
At Mugs, we actually are religious about vintaging the Anchor Christmas beers, the holiday beers, the special ales, or whatever they call them. Uh-huh. And we vintage those.
We have one sitting here, too.
Well, yes.
A 1999 Anchor Christmas.
But we've actually vintaged from, at one point, I had a 92, 94. People actually. But you know, the funny part about it is that people do come in and look for this, which is really.
Oh, it's huge now. Yeah, I mean, people are very excited about vintage. I think a lot of it is so that they can learn. You know, people, I mean, some people are just like, ooh, it's older, so it must be better. Some of the beer geeks just want to learn what happens to a beer. And that's a great example. If a bar has been sitting on a barley wine that they're familiar with, but it's 5 years old, they want to see what's happened to that profile. But it's true. You see a lot of vintaging of beers, and it's like, oh, we found this old keg in the back, and oh, it's worth more now, and it's really
not. Or
it's
undrinkable either way.
So, yeah.
I don't look at it that way.
This is the first radio show about vintage beers that I've ever been part of.
It's a great topic. Really,
I laid down a bunch of kegs of Victory horizontal just because I wanted to I'm doing a vertical of horizontal. I just thought that. But I did five vintages of old horizontal, and it really, you could dramatically, the hops were reduced.
Watch them reduce.
Yeah. So,
and watch other flavors come out and come together because there isn't that hop profile. So it's very interesting what can happen with
five
the barley
vintages
wine.
Of the exact same beer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Ron had changed the recipe at all during that time. Oftentimes they tweak. Obviously the ingredients are different because each harvest is different.
Sure.
But it was dramatically different from 5 years old to the current vintage. It was a real nice experiment to do.
Yeah.
That beer was on draft a little longer than I anticipated. Five halves of a barley wine don't fly out your door.
Yeah, especially when we do like the Christmas in July at the Blind Tiger. It's really difficult to get through those beers when it's 90 degrees outside. Well, and
that's a popular theme now, Christmas in July. Do you think
it sounds good, but it's hard.
The Christmas beers themselves are necessarily age-worthy?
It depends on the alcohol content and, if they're spiced. Some of them lay down well. I just found a case of Affligem Noel from like 10 years ago, and I don't even want to cook with it. You know, I'm just going to pour it down the drain.
That really is not a huge beer.
No, it's too delicate. I just lost it in my basement. It just kind of found
it
in
happens.
The corner.
But the Anchor beers also, they're not big beers.
No.
But they kind of live through the whole process. And I'll say, because I always called it a sprucey beer, because every time I drank that beer, it was like,
it's always a different recipe from that, that brewery.
Yeah.
I mean,
they tweak it here
and some
there,
years are great and some years aren't so great. And some probably have more of a backbone to be able to age.
I think they're a little too herbaceous for me when they come out. I can't drink it the year they come out.
They need a couple years,
yeah, at least several months.
Well, I used to say it's just like drinking a spruce tree. It's like, you know, you have the sprucey taste.
You
know.
Some are super super spicy and some
are
really spicy.
But we're going to take a short break here. We're going to come back in a few minutes and talk about more vintage beers, and we'll have a call from UK and talk about beer in the United Kingdom on Beer Sessions Radio.
You broke his heart and made him cry, and he's been blue since then. Now he's found somebody new, and you want him back again.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here at Roberta's in Bushwick. Roberta's is a starred restaurant. It's like 2 stars. We get to do our show every week. We get pizza, steak. You know, who knows what you'll get at Roberta's, but it's always going to be good. And another nod to our friend Ray Dieter, who passed away. We would do the show every Tuesday night, and his favorite dish was steak for two. And
he would order it for himself. Yeah.
Just for him. Yeah. So we're here with some great guys. We have Tom Peters from Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia, Ed Barastecki from Mugg's Ale House in Brooklyn. I think it's Mugg's versus Monk's today. These two great
beers. I already messed it up.
I see.
I really do know the difference between those two establishments.
I still like Jimmy Carbone.
Thank you. And so We're talking about vintage beers, and we've been tasting these wild beers. We're going to have a calling guest from the United Kingdom. There's an old. Here's Mike Battaglia from Total Beverage Solutions. Hey, Mike.
How's it going, folks?
Mike, why don't you introduce our next guest?
We are going to be talking to Mr. John Bexham from the Green King Brewery. He is the master brewer of Green King. So he is the man behind the Old Speckled Hen and these two fine beers we have in front of us.
All right. Hey, John, how are you?
Welcome.
Hi, Jimmy. Good to hear you.
All right. Well, you got a good room here of knowledgeable beer people. You got representing the Blind Tiger, Monk's Cafe, and Mug's Ale House in America. And they're all big fans of yours. How are you doing?
I've just been listening to you online.
How do we sound?
Sorry to hear that.
You've been keeping up.
Well, you have to remember, over here, I'm 5 hours ahead of you, but I'm not 5 beers ahead of you yet.
No.
Not yet.
You have time to catch up.
You should have sent us some Green King IPA.
Yeah.
Let's go around the room as an introduction. We got Ed. Tell us what you know about Green King.
And, what do I know about
tell
Green
us
King?
About, you just...
Actually, I remember years ago, somebody coming in and telling me at Mug's, you have to try this Green King IPA. So they came in with an empty can. And I looked at them, well, how am I supposed to try this when you're coming in with an empty can of Green King IPA? And the can looked great. And I actually think we still have it there. But until years later, we got to try that beer and actually poured it and happily at Mug's.
That's excellent.
I love that beer. I think it travels really well. It's got a good hop backbone. I think that's one of the better beers that comes out of London, or England anyway.
And I've had it on cask multiple occasions. It's one of my favorites that comes over the pond.
So, John, how did you get become a brewer? I know you started at Bass in 1977.
I did. Well, I was born into a brewing town in Burton-on-Trent, where, of course, the Bass Breweries became over 200 years ago, and came from a semi-brewing background. My grandfather used to make wooden casks to put ale in.
He was a cooper.
But he liked the sauce a little too much and had to leave the profession. And he ended up making coffins.
same skill set, different phase, but
no steel bands.
Shape, same principle.
All right, and you love what you do, Mike. Tell us a little bit more about Green King and the beers that are available here in the States.
Well, we are actually tasting something right now that isn't available, which is the Old Golden Hen. It's a light golden ale, and we're using some hops from Tasmania. Ooh. So it's got that really nice tropical kind of mango papaya
really
notes. Very, very nice. We're also looking at the Old Crafty Hen next, staring us right in the face, which is...
This is the Hen series.
Yeah, so this is essentially the Hen series, if you will. And the Old
which
Crafty...
Which came first?
Yeah. The Old Crafty is a blend of the 5X, which is a 2-year-old aged vintage beer. Sorry, Ed. Yeah, I got to drink that up. 2-year aged vintage beer mixed with a higher gravity Old Speckled Hen. And as far as I can tell, Green King itself was traditionally a blending brewery to begin with. They did a lot of this kind of vintage blending kind of. Brewing process, and so this is kind of an ode back to the old style of what Green King used to do.
So, John, how long have you been the brewmaster of Green King?
Well, I've been head brewer there for 10 years, and okay. That's my 35th year in the industry.
And where were you before?
I was at Bass.
Oh, you were
Bass. Bass Ale in Burton-on-Trent and in Birmingham.
Cool.
All right.
But you spent some time in the United States, right?
I did. Back in 1986, I came and commissioned the brewery in Boston called the Commonwealth Brewing Company.
Yes.
Ah. Yes.
And it was a great time, and I met some fantastic people, and I think it was 1986 in the summer. I left 2 days before Christmas. I had a most wonderful time.
Was Paul Seller working there at that time?
Right.
Sorry?
Paul Saylor.
Paul Saylor, was he working at that time?
No, because this was in its early in its first year, I think. I looked online and I see it lasted until about 2002.
But it ended up in New York, too. I think there was
And then they did Back Bay Brewing on Boylston in Boston
right,
with Todd Mont.
Too, right?
Yeah.
Back Bay was a great brewery,
So, John, tell us, John, a little more about what you do at Green King. So what's your typical day like as a brewer in England?
Well, I mean, today was a non-typical day. I've actually been out in trade, and I spent the day with a driver driving around a number of our pubs.
And you didn't drive down here?
Sorry?
You didn't drive down here to visit us?
No, not this time. That was a month ago.
We wanted you in the studio.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's where we were going to be a month ago, but our time just didn't allow, unfortunately. But we did manage to get around quite a few bars in Manhattan. But didn't quite make yours, I'm afraid, Jimmy.
Well, we're happy to have you on the air.
So I want to know what your influence was from the United States. Like, your time here, brewing in Boston, did you take any of those, like, influences back with you?
Yeah, I remember going to a bar back in 1986, and there were three beers on the bar. There was Guinness, Heineken, and Bass Ale. And I went into
so they
bar
had no
in
beer.
Massachusetts recently. I think I counted 50 taps.
Wow.
And, of course, there was a small brewery just about starting up when I was there called Sam Adams.
So you were really, you were so ahead of...
It's huge now.
Yeah, well, you were ahead of the curve, so it means that all this craziness that's taking place now really hadn't even gotten momentum back then. But
Sure.
But
what about shipping cask ales? How do you feel about shipping cask ales to the States?
Oh, wouldn't that be great? In fact, yes, it would. I must admit, at the Commonwealth Brewery, we did actually make cask beer, and I remember making Boston's Best Burton Bitter.
That actually was delicious.
And it was made on an old bass.
You tried it, Tom?
I tried it before a Celtics game. It was real close to the garden.
Right, yeah. Happy days.
I've got a question for you now. This is Ed. Green King never showed up in cask in the States? Because I could have swore we poured
I've
it.
I've had it.
We've had it.
Right, poured it. We've poured it, so.
Yeah.
So you have ship casks.
Exactly. Caught you in a lie.
But only in small volumes.
Yes, of course.
And that's the way we like it.
No.
Mike, tell us a little more. Tell us the plan for Green King and what they'll be selling here. And
yeah, well, the Old Crafty is going to start showing up in stores now. It's in our distributor's warehouse, and it's slowly but surely trickling out.
It's really nice.
Right around this time of year, you can expect to see some casks come into the market. We do the Green King IPA, the Old Speckled Hen, Ruddles, which is also a brilliant Moreland brand. So you'll see those, and if we're lucky, if John doesn't drink on all of it, we'll have some Old Crafty in cask as well. So, yeah, you can definitely expect that right around now. We start sending it around November, and we stop around March just because as soon as it gets hot, and it's just a nightmare. That stuff goes bad real quick.
All right. John, I'm going to ask you a question. It's that time of night. We're hanging out. We've got the old brewery guys and the old brewer here. This Friday night.
And a bunch of old beer.
Friday night. You know, you're at your town. What town are you in England?
Now I'm 10:15 half past 10 in the evening.
So you're in your town in England, and it's a Friday night. What time do you go to the pub, and what do you drink?
I probably go straight after work in town, and I would drink Abbott Ale, which is my favorite beer.
Yep.
Drinking Abbott Ale, it would be in cask format, so it'd be in a living format rather than a stabilized, and probably have a couple of those.
Nice and fresh.
Yeah, then I get home, and then my partner Sharon and I will go to the pub, nice country pub with a log fire and a wet dog, so to speak. And
competing aromas.
I have a nice, probably two or three of the pints. I then hand the car keys to her, and she drives me home.
That is so convenient.
All right.
We'll be right there.
And okay, let's ask Tom, the old bar owner here, Tom Peters.
Hey.
What do you do on a Friday night?
Work. I get out of work about 4 in the morning. I have my first beer at 10 or 11 o'clock. I'll usually start with an Orval, and then I finish with an Orval.
So you're still devoted to the Belgians.
I could drink Orval and Saison DuPont anytime, anywhere.
And Ed from Muggs, what's your Friday night like?
My Friday night, I start off with a little Emma that's 2.5 years old. Then I upgrade to a Michaela that's 4.5 years old. And then my 16-year-old finishes me off for the night, and I'm done.
Well,
Jimmy, what do you do?
Yeah, Jimmy.
Come on, Jimmy.
I want to hear your answer.
These days I start with a nice local beer like Barrier Brewing from Long Island. I have a couple of those, and I just get warmed up for the night. But I do like this idea of starting with the local beers and then moving into these vintage beers. Because they're pretty cool. I haven't had too many Thomas Hardy. Do you guys drink, John, do you drink anything like Thomas Hardy and barley wines and all that on a regular basis?
Yeah, well, yeah. In fact, had we met a month ago, I brought you a bottle of the 5X, which we used to make the old Crafty Hen. And that's at anything between 10 and 12%.
Wow. Mm.
And it's
session
almost
beer.
Slightly... Slightly sour, 2 years old, and it's matured in oak. It goes like almost like a slightly sour sherry with a slight balsamic. But if you drink that in a wine glass, it really is a fantastic nightcap.
A lot of these beers are that way, where you feel like you can have a 12-ounce bottle and share it with someone else, and you're sipping it more like you sip sherry, so you don't consume quite as much, even if it is a high alcohol.
Yeah, and in fact, that's what in front of me now, the old Crafty Hen that I'm drinking it in a small goblet. Mm-hmm.
So Green King, has it done any vintaging of any of its beers or gone to the barley wine style or anything like that?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
I'm sure you didn't, but barley wine style, has Green King done anything as barley wine?
Yeah, we did one some years ago. We called it Audit Ale.
That's the one that you just mentioned.
Yeah, no, that was 5X. But Audit Ale we did some years ago, but we haven't for a number of years. But
is there a market for that?
We're starting to find it.
Is there a market for that now in the UK?
You know, on this last trip, yeah.
I think if you look at the UK market, it's almost reflecting the American taste in the sense that there's now 800. microbrewers here, and they're all trying new things and also bringing back old recipes, and barley wine style is making a comeback.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, his last trip here, we were, we did a few interviews, we were talking with some people, and everybody we tasted on the 5X was, you know, nearly begging for us to bring it over.
Awesome. John, can you stay on? We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio.
All right.
Big Dan, won't you come on home? Ain't you gonna marry me?
Yeah!
My folks all wanna know when the wedding's gonna be. They're making plans, shaking hands. I've been waiting so long. Has something gone wrong? Big Dan, if you don't come home,
Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Jimmy Carbone here with Jen Swartman, Erica Fisher, our walking guest, Tom Peters, Ed Barastecki, and Mike Batavia, and we got John from Green King on the air. John, you know what we're drinking while you're in England? Tom, what did you just pour for us? Something more vintage beers, old guys and old beers tonight on Beer Sessions Radio.
This is the Lecoq Extra Double Stout, and it's yummy. From 2000, so it's 11 years in the bottle.
So there is there's obviously a tradition of this is an English beer, right?
Indeed.
There's a tradition of these English beers that age well.
Barley wines, some of the old ales, the bigger beers, obviously the bitters and things along that line do not age well
but
at all.
Outside of the American market, I mean, who else drinks these beers?
I would imagine people in the colder climates of England and Scotland.
Do you think, John, there's people in the UK interested in these strong, age-worthy beers? Or do you think they're mostly for export?
I think, obviously the stronger the beer and the more challenging the flavor, then you start getting into a niche market. But people are looking for flavor and a point of difference. And I think, you know, that the specialty beers have a place, and the beer connoisseurs definitely seek them out.
That being said, there was a huge trend for session beers for a long time, wasn't there? Lower alcohol?
And there still is. I mean, one of the great traditions in the UK and England, of course, is the English pub. And that has been renowned for years for having session ability, where you will go and drink, you know, quite large volumes of beer. But, of course, the strength is generally in the sort of 3.5% ABV and to 5%. And I was amazed coming to the States recently to see some of the strength of the beers, you know.
Absolutely.
I look at the old Crafty Hen at 6.5% thinking this is a good premium beer and actually is probably mid-range for a lot of the American beers that I found.
Right, especially where we are in the East Coast, I feel like. Although people are paying attention to sessions, so it's all cyclical. It's like people sort of go through phases, and hopefully they get to a point where they drink sessionable beers when they have to get themselves home. And then they get themselves home, they settle into something really, like, cozy.
I think it's also seasonal that, people drink more session beers during the summer than the winter. Yeah. Winter, they drink higher gravity beers.
But as far as the breweries in the States, it seems like a 6% beer has become a session beer.
Oh, yeah.
It really, in my eyes, from our drinkers at Mugs.
It was for a long time, and now everyone's really excited when some of our established fantastic craft breweries are actually developing beer recipes that have a hell of a lot of flavor and are much lower alcohol content. And so there's a market for that too now that there wasn't maybe 5 years ago.
Jen, what's a sessionable craft beer that you like?
Well, I think of one, Stone Levitation is one that we didn't have on the East Coast for the longest time. And I kept hearing the Stone rep saying, wow, we've got to get some of that beer out here. And I'm like, what is this beer? Well, it turns out it's actually their session ale that was being consumed entirely in Southern California. And none of it was making it out. And now they're brewing more of it because they realize there's actually a market for it. But it's a really amazing, complex, kind of pale ale. There's some hops, there's some complexity, great malt, and then it's also, I can't remember what the ABV is, but much lower than what their IPA is.
I think it's 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5, like 4.5, but at Mugs, we're Ruination fans.
Well, I know the crowd at Mugs, and they have a different focus.
4.5% bit of flow.
I think most of the session beers I serve at Mugs are always locally within 90 miles.
Okay.
Mugs or Mugs?
So I try not to sell light lagers or pilsners from Europe or from the
Makes
West Coast.
Because those beers don't age, going back to what we're saying.
Right, so I consume it within a month or two of being brewed. I think it's in the prime condition.
Give us a couple examples of your local session beers in Philadelphia.
Well, Stouts does a STODTS. Carol Stout does it. I think it's my favorite pilsner. It's got a real good malt content. It's a northern German style pilsner, good amount of hops. I think it's fabulous. And then Brian O'Reilly does a Helles from Sly Fox. It just, you can literally sit down and have tea.
He's really a cool brewer, isn't he? Sly Fox.
Brian's great.
I mean, I don't think we see enough of him in New York. But I know right now he has the Sly Fox Grisette Saison.
Yeah.
Which I have on draft. Also,
well, he's a Phil Markowski disciple. So
is he?
He's really into the Saisons. And Phil's the master. He literally wrote the book.
And have you had the Sly Fox Dunkel Lager?
I've had the Dunkel, yes.
That's one of my favorite session beers that he's making because it's a little color, a little flavor, but it's still only like 4.5%.
Yeah, it's light on the tongue, but you have a little malt backbone, but it's not sweet or cloying in any way. It's a true session beer. So in Philly, we have a lot of German heritage. The first Pilsner in America was brewed in Philadelphia, and that has carried on. So we get really good light session beers there. So, I love the guys at Stone. I love Greg. I love all the things they do, but that's not what I'm going to bring in for me. Since have them, right there.
And yeah, you don't have any session beers at Mugs? Mugs?
We're all 8% and up. No, yeah.
It's the demand he has. I'm telling you, I've hung out in that bar before. I know who those people are.
You don't even know where it is. Actually, no.
I was in your bar on
Sunday.
No,
our session beers are just Pilsners. We serve Radeberger Pilsner, which for us, it's done well. And for the beer geek, they look at it as being too commercial. But for me, a Pilsner, I'm not a Pilsner fan. I'm a hophead. So I'd love to put
those. There are hoppy Pilsners.
Yes, I know, but I'm still an IPA fan. So I'd like to put 32 IPAs up. My wife's been trying to choke me and say, no, you can't do that.
Let's open another. Are there any more vintage beers we haven't tried yet?
We have this Anchor Christmas.
It's a big bottle.
I think we're up to the challenge.
I think we can do it. Yeah, so knowing this crowd?
We got to do it.
One thing I noticed, in New York we have the Good Beer Seal, the goodbeerseal.com. And what it does is it honors some of the older, more established beer bars. And Ray Dieter had one of them at DBA. Sam Barbieri, Waterfront Ale House, Ed Baristecki at Mugs.
And also celebrates a lot of new ones
But the point of this is that you guys have some of the older beer bar owners have certain beers like Monster Ale from Brooklyn, which have come up in the same kind of conversation about aging beers or these specialty Anchor beers. And for me, I don't really think about those beers as being the go-to beers because there's so many small craft breweries now. But not too long ago, this is what you had, right? I mean, Anchor's a great beer.
Well, I have to get in on this because I know, Jimmy, every time we've been at Beer Seal meetings, you always talk about us old-timers, and I never thought I was an old-timer, but I guess I am an old-timer now after you've dubbed me an old-timer. But we've been there from 92. I mean,
I'm
not
going
to
ask.
Yeah, we've been there from 92. We tried to do what we as beer lovers, because that's the way I approached it. I was a beer lover. I used to be a systems programmer. My mother hated me because I threw my college education out the window because I became a bar owner. But I love beer, and that's where it started. And my wife and I, we started this business, and
you bought an existing bar, right?
That bar has been there from later on. I found out through the years that it's been there from the early 1900s. It actually was passed down from family to family to family. And we had actually, I never do parties, but this one person called me up, and they had a 50th birthday they wanted to do for this gentleman that owned the bar, and it was in his family. And we did it for them, and they brought all these pictures. It was unbelievable. It's like from the early 1900s, the bar was there. Yeah. And we tried to keep it going. But the whole thing was, with us, we got in an environment where, we're beer lovers coming in. I remember being on 9th Street and 2nd Avenue. I grew up in Manhattan, drinking a Sam Smith. And, here we are opening a beer bar in Brooklyn where there was nobody around. So we started off with 8 draft lines, and I'm not going to go into this whole thing. But looking at like the vintage beers, it's something that we've gotten a handle on and grasp from the beginning, because it seems like it's like wine. People vintage wines, why not beer? Of course, when you vintage all these beers, there's all of them have these delicate little flavors that kind of cross over from one to the other. But this beer, this Christmas beer, for me, was one that we always vintage. And we've had people that really love it. And, for me, like I mentioned earlier, the spruciness, dies out. And well, I think in this one.
This one's from 1999. I think the spruce is
I taste
still,
the spruce
it's
probably
really big still.
Yeah, it's also
more
a
than
magnum.
I get then.
But yeah, it probably was a lot bigger in 99.
Yeah, and Fritz Maytag he's the godfather of craft brewing in America.
I know
Jack at New Albion was the first guy to open a brew pub, but you know Fritz is really the guy who made this happen in America.
So what would you say? What is the criteria? Like, what is your criteria for laying down beer?
I say alcohol content. The higher the better in general, and whether it's bottle condition. You know, if it has live yeast in it, it has a better, you know, propensity is that it can lay down longer. But you cross the line. I find stuff in my basement. I need to go through that more frequently. But I found the 1987 Orval box of 12. And so I popped that open, and I poured out for four of my friends. And we have a sip of it, and it's all Brettanomyces. It's wet leather. It's just really funky. The next sip is orange marmalade. The next sip is oxidized. And it was so quick, you know. And I was going to serve it at a beer dinner, but I thought I would have to pour it and say, "Drink
Stand
your beer
over
now.
Each patron." Yeah. Yeah.
We actually at Mugs we cellared Vapeur de Folie. It was like the small. I don't know. I guess a nano brewery out of Belgium at one point.
Jean-Louis Dietz.
Yeah. And we had these bottles sitting down there, and I didn't know. And we went, we cleared out all these kegs, and I'm like, oh, wow, look at this. And we opened the one up. It was done. And then we opened another one up. It was actually live still. But they were all labeled. They had 92, 93 on there. But some of them lived and some of them didn't. So it's kind of hit or miss when you do this.
Yeah, I don't think the beer needs to have carbonation to be good, though. I've had flat beers that are fabulous.
Yeah, no, I'm not going that way. But some of them turn and some of them don't, which is weird because you could put a whole case in and you'll pull one out and the one will be fine and the next one will not. Yeah. So I don't know. It's hit or miss. That's the way I look at it.
But it's like your children, Ned.
It's a
you
gamble.
Just don't know.
My children are finishing me off, Jimmy.
So where can we go? Okay, I'm in New York, Philly. What are some good places if I want to try some vintage beers?
Well, Blind Tiger.
Yeah. No, he said Philly.
Well, Philly, of course, you come to Monks.
Philly, New York.
Yeah, well, of course. So
what did you say,
it's
Monks?
Obvious. It's
you have vintage
it's
beers
Monks
on your
it's
list?
The Belgian Cafe.
I have vintage beers. They're not always on the list. Yeah, people can ask me. I had a 20-year-old Thomas Hardy on the menu, this little 6-ounce size, and I was down to four bottles of it, and I said, I was getting $10 a bottle. I said, you know what? I don't really want to sell it. I want to keep it on my menu. So I put it on at $99 thinking nobody's going to buy it.
And someone bought
it. I sold
them
in 3 days. I'm like, somebody out here wants to give me $99 for a beer, I'll take it. But I really wanted to keep it on my list.
I kind of did the same thing with Sam Adams Utopias, and we put it up for $350, and we had people come in and actually buy it, which I was blown away.
I was at Mugs when
somebody
bought a bottle of Utopias, and that was when I got my taste of it. And it was this, and it was in the middle of the afternoon.
And I've never tried
it. Scott was behind the bar, and these two guys were just like, we're going to have that. And that's how easy it was for them to drop $350.
Yeah, I was using it as just like a publicity type of thing, but it actually worked. But actually, truthfully, the beer costs a lot of money to buy. And,
well, it's $100 a bottle.
Yeah,
at least, right?
I think over that. But but anyway, I want to put a plug in for my Belgium festival coming up. Can I do that?
Come on, go for it.
All right. We're doing Belgium to Brooklyn December 3rd and 4th, and that's the number 6 festival. We've got 17 beers going up every day. And actually, I think I'm gonna change the name to Split Thy Belgian Skull instead of Split Thy Belgian Brooklyn
Jimmy
Skull.
Anderson?
Yes, instead of Split Thy Brooklyn Skull. So,
Tom, anything special happening in Philadelphia the next month?
Well, I'm leaving town so everybody can breathe easier. I'm going to Belgium to Orval on December the 3rd.
All right. Tough life.
Erica Fisher, our special studio guest.
Hey.
How are you? Jen, anything going on at Blind Tiger for December?
Oh, yeah. Well, before December, on the 30th of November, we have Du Duciel from Montreal, one of my favorite breweries in the world, coming and bringing a bunch of amazing beer. They're incredible guys. They're going to be in town. There'll be a whole slew of them if I know those guys. They travel in packs.
They all ride in a van.
And and Dave will be in town, and we'll have a great time with some incredible beer from Montreal.
All right. That's one of my favorite brew pubs anywhere in the world.
Brew pubs, breweries, people in the business, they're fantastic.
And John, anything happening in the UK for the holidays?
Well, this weekend our Christmas fair starts in Bury St Edmunds, which is very sort of Germanic. And next week I'm off to Brussels to showcase my beers with also a range of other breweries to the local or to the European Parliament. So we're going to fly the flag for England over in the EU.
Wow,
I'll probably, I'll probably bring a few Belgian beers back with me, of course.
One of my favorite beer bars in the world is their Motor Lambic.
They're great guys.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Guys. Well, John, listen, thanks so much for calling in and being on the show. A couple more things. December 17th, Battle of the Belgians at Jimmy's number 43. You get the best of the American versus best of the Belgians here, too. And DBA is doing December 17th and 18th. There's an annual handmade gifts and crafts holiday fair with good beer. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Stashes Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to Jen, Tom, Ed, John, and Mike for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.